Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Well, good morning. It's May 11th. It's Thursday morning at 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and we're waiting for John and Laurie to give us a call, but for some reason they may be delayed. Usually they'd be on time. So we'll just wait a little bit and see if we can, if they join us. So in the meantime, then, I guess what I'll have to do is prepare for something else, which I didn't think we would start so early, so I haven't put everything in action, but we will in a moment, so just bear with me a moment. One second, get to some of the news, and we'll be able to get started if they don't join us. Bear with me a moment here. Okay. All right, let's just see a couple of things that are happening, which will be important to us. All right, so let's start off with what's going on here with regard to the U.S. and Mexican border, because there's a spike in border crossings, which are fueling political tensions at Title 42 ends. So it seems, let's see what, okay, I'm not quite sure what this is. Anyway, so it seems that the United States will lift COVID-19 border restrictions, known as Title 42, on Thursday night, a major shift that has drawn tens of thousands of migrants to the United States-Mexico border, straining local communities and intensifying political divisions. So the number of people caught crossing illegally has climbed in recent weeks, with daily apprehensions surpassing 10,000 on Monday and Tuesday, and U.S. border cities have struggled to shelter the new arrivals and provide transportation to other destinations. On Wednesday morning, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the CBP, had more than 28,000 migrants in custody, far beyond its stated capacity, in what appeared to be a record, a U.S. official had said, requesting anonymity to discuss internal operations. CBP did not respond to a request for comment. Against the backdrop of the chaotic scenes, President Joe Biden's administration is surging personnel and funds to the border while implementing a new regulation that will deny asylum to most migrants who cross illegally. The new measure will take effect when Title 42 ends, along with a broad COVID public health emergency. Well, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said that the new rule would mean tougher consequences for migrants crossing illegally who could be deported and barred from the United States for 5 years if they do not qualify for asylum. Well, Republicans fault Biden, a Democrat running for re-election in 2024, for scrapping the restrictive policies of former President Donald Trump, a Republican seeking to win back the White House. Well, in recent days, Biden administration officials have escalated their attacks on Republicans, saying they failed to fix immigration laws or provide adequate border funds. Quote, I asked the Congress for more money for the Border Patrol, end quote, Biden said on Wednesday. They didn't do it. Well, the administration sought more than $4 billion in December to cope with a broken immigration system, Mayorkas said on Wednesday. Quote, we received approximately half of what we requested, half of what we needed, he said at a news conference. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the world's largest business organization, urged Congress to provide, quote, significantly more resources, end quote, for the border and expand legal immigration. Well, Congress cannot sit idly by and let this disorder continue unabated, so said Executive Vice President Neil Bradley in a statement. Well, the Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives aims to pass a bill today that would toughen border security and restrict access to asylum, but it would face an uphill battle in the Senate, where Democrats hold a narrow majority. Well, since Biden took office in January 2021, the country has seen a record 4.6 million arrests of migrants crossing illegally, although the tally includes many repeat crossers. A Reuters Ipsos poll released this week showed that only 26% approved of Biden's handling of immigration. In Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott, a fierce critic of Biden's border policies, expanded a National Guard deployment this week, quote, to help intercept and repel large groups of migrants trying to enter Texas illegally, end quote. Well, asked on Wednesday whether Texas National Guard troops were overstepping legal boundaries by taking on border enforcement duties, Mayorkas said he deferred to the U.S. Department of Justice. Well, with the Biden administration saying it will toughen the enforcement under the new asylum, new asylum standard, some migrants have scrambled to cross while the Title 42 remains in effect. Hundreds of migrants in San Diego, California, including many small children, have been stuck in a no-man's land between two tall border walls, often for days, as they wait to be processed by overwhelmed U.S. border agents. Well, on Wednesday, volunteers on the U.S. side passed sandwiches through the gaps in the wall and said conditions there were squalid as confusion reigned over the change in policy. Joshua, who's 23, a migrant from Venezuela, who requested that Reuters use only his first name, hoped to enter the United States before the policy shift. He traveled to the border in Tijuana, Mexico, without his wife and daughter, not wanting to bring them through a dangerous jungle separating Colombia and Panama, he said. Quote, with God's protection, nothing is impossible, he added. Another Venezuelan migrant, Luis Rivero, speaking through the border fence separating Ciudad Juarez in Mexico and El Paso, Texas, said this week that he wanted to cross now because the new policy, quote, will be stricter, end quote. So that is the story. We'll have to see where all this stuff goes. But definitely, it's a problem on the border. So we'll see what goes on. Well, let's look at what's going on in Kyiv. Zelensky says that the counteroffensive is yet to begin despite Kyiv's gains at the front. So it seems that President Volodymyr Zelensky said that Ukraine's long-awaited counteroffensive against Russia's invasion force had yet to start, even as his generals claimed some of their biggest battlefield successes in months. Kyiv said it has pushed Russian forces back over the past several days near the eastern city of Bakhmut in local assaults, while a full-blown counteroffensive involving tens of thousands of troops and hundreds of Western tanks is still being prepared. Quote, we still need a bit more time, end quote, Zelensky said in an interview with European broadcasters. Well, Ukrainian forces had already received enough equipment from Western allies for their campaign, but were waiting for the full complement of armored vehicles to arrive to reduce their casualties, Zelensky had said, in a major step up in Western military support for Ukraine. Britain announced it was sending Storm Shadow cruise missiles that would give Kyiv the ability to strike targets deep behind Russian lines. Quote, the key here is to give Ukraine that capability to defend itself, end quote, Defense Secretary Ben Wallace told Parliament in London. Western countries, including the United States, had previously held back from providing long-range weapons for fear of provoking Russian retaliation, Wallace said that Britain had weighed the risk. The war in Ukraine is at a turning point, with Kyiv poised to unleash its new counterstrike after 6 months of keeping its forces on the defensive, while Russia mounted a huge winter offensive that failed to capture significant territory. Well, Moscow's main target for months has been Bakhmut, but it is yet to fully capture, despite the bloodiest ground combat in Europe since World War II. The head of Russia's Wagner private army, which has led the fight in Bakhmut, has acknowledged Ukrainian gains against regular Russian forces on the city's flanks for several days while complaining of a lack of support for his men. Well, Ukrainian operations were, quote, unfortunately partially successful, end quote, Wagner leader Yevgeny Prigozhin said on social media on Thursday, calling Zelensky's assertion that the counteroffensive had not yet begun, quote, deceptive, end quote. Well, Prigozhin said on Tuesday that a Russian brigade had fled from the trenches, giving up a swath of land southwest of Bakhmut. A Ukrainian unit claimed to have routed the brigade, destroying two of its companies. The commander of Ukraine's ground forces said on Wednesday that Russian forces had retreated in places by as much as 2 kilometers. Ukraine has boasted of few similar advances since its last big offensive last November. Well, Russia's military has not acknowledged a setback. In its regular daily briefing on Thursday, the Defense Ministry said that Russian troops were continuing to assault the western part of Bakhmut, with paratroopers pinning down Ukrainian army units on the flanks. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov acknowledged that the war was very difficult, quote unquote. He said he had no doubt that Bakhmut, quote, will be captured and will be kept under control, end quote. Well, Reuters could not independently verify the situation on the ground in Bakhmut. Western allies are seeking hundreds of tanks and armored vehicles or sending them to Ukraine for its counteroffensive and have trained thousands of Ukrainian troops abroad. In anticipation of the Ukrainian counteroffensive, Russia has resumed airstrikes on Ukraine over the past 2 weeks after a lull of nearly 2 months. Moscow says that Ukraine has used drones to strike occupied areas and Russian territory near the border. In the latest report, the governor of Russia's Bryansk region bordering Ukraine said a drone had hit a fuel storage depot. No one was hurt. Kyiv does not comment on such incidents. Well, some Ukrainian officials have tried to manage expectations for their counteroffensive, cautioning against expecting a swift repeat of Ukraine's big military successes last year, when it pushed Russian forces back from Kyiv's outskirts and recaptured swaths of occupied territory in unexpected breakthroughs. Russia is determined to defend the sixth of Ukraine's territory that it has occupied and claims to have annexed forever. In the 6 months since the last major Ukrainian advance, it has built extensive fortifications along the front. Penetrating that with an armored assault would be far more complicated than anything Ukraine's forces have attempted yet. So we'll have to see where all this goes. It's absolutely amazing. So we'll see really what happens. I'm not really quite sure. Bear with me a moment. As of this morning, interestingly enough, Russia's Wagner boss, Prigozhin, claims that the Ukrainian offensive has started around Bakhmut's flanks. This came in early this morning. Well, the head of Russia's Wagner private army said on Thursday that Ukrainian units had begun their counterattack and were approaching Bakhmut from the flanks, while Russia's defense ministry said its paratroopers were supporting an advance on the west of the city. Reuters could not independently verify either of the assertions, which came amid an escalating dispute between Wagner boss Yevgeny Prigozhin and the Russian defense ministry over the conduct of the invasion now in its 15th month. Well, Prigozhin said that Ukrainian operations were proving to be unfortunately partially successful in an audio message posted on his Telegram channel. He said Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was, quote, being deceptive, end quote, when he said that Ukraine's counteroffensive had been delayed as it waited for more aid from foreign countries. Prigozhin said that the counteroffensive was actually going ahead at full speed around Bakhmut. Russian forces, spearheaded by Wagner, have been waging a bloody assault on the city in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk region since last summer. Prigozhin last week claimed his forces controlled around 95%, but threatened to pull out if Moscow did not deliver more ammunition to his fighters. Well, on Wednesday, both Prigozhin and the Ukrainian military said that Kyiv's forces had routed a Russian army unit near Bakhmut in a significant advance for Ukraine. Prigozhin has repeatedly accused senior Russian defense officials of starving his forces of ammunition and blamed them for reverses around the town. In its regular daily briefing on Thursday, Russia's defense ministry made no reference to the claimed setback and said that troops were continuing to advance. Quote, assault groups continue their offensive in the western part of Altymyosk. I don't pronounce Russian well. It said using the Soviet-era name for the city of Bakhmut, paratroopers provided support for them or to them and have pinned down Ukrainian army units on the flanks, it added. Moscow says that capturing Bakhmut will allow it to conduct further offensives across eastern Ukraine. Zelensky and the West have downplayed the strategic importance of the city for Russia, though Kyiv has repeatedly refused to withdraw its troops. So we'll just have to see where this goes. Unbelievable. Well, this is interesting because it's Finland, and it seems that the Finnish prime minister has divorced her husband. Well, Finland's outgoing prime minister, Sanna Marin, has filed for divorce jointly with her husband of 3 years, Markus Aikonen, they said on Instagram on Wednesday. We are grateful for the 19 years together and our beloved daughter. We will remain best friends, they said in a separate Instagram story. Marin and Raikkonen, who until recently worked at a venture capital firm, share a five-year-old daughter. They married in 2020 while Marin was in office dealing with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, we have lived our youth together, entered adulthood together, and grown into parents for our dear daughter together, Marin wrote on Instagram again after her August 2020 wedding to Raikkonen. Now, Marin and her Social Democratic Party lost Finland's election for parliament last month, trailing the right-wing National Coalition Party as well as the nationalist Finns party. Marin is 37, the youngest prime minister. When she took office in 2019, is considered by fans around the globe as a millennial role model for progressive new leaders, even as voters at home opted for a new government. So we'll just have to see where all that ends. So we wish them well. It's very hard to depart, and divorce is not easy on anybody, especially when there's a child involved as well. Now let's see what's going on some other fronts. Bear with me a moment here. 1 second. Let's see what's going on from Germany. We hear that Germany is warning the European Union on hitting China and Russia sanctions. Seems that Germany led calls urging caution against targeting China under new European Union sanctions over Russia's invasion of Ukraine during a first discussion among the bloc's 27 countries on proposed new restrictions, five diplomatic sources had said. Well, the European Union is discussing its 11th package of sanctions against Russia as invading Ukraine, meant to focus on those circumventing existing trade restrictions. The bloc's executive proposed blacklisting several Chinese companies and introducing a new mechanism that would open the way for a possible restriction of European Union exports in the future to countries that flout sanctions. That latter part raised concern with Germany, according to the sources. Several other countries also spoke of the need to strike a balance between enforcing sanctions and upsetting international diplomatic and trade ties, they said. Italy backed Germany's proposal to target foreign companies rather than countries over any circumvention of sanctions, according to sources familiar with the Wednesday discussion held behind closed doors. The diplomats spoke under condition of anonymity on Thursday, while Germany's diplomatic mission to the European Union declined comment. German government sources in Berlin said that they were critical of making the European Union sanctions extraterritorial, quote-unquote, in a bid to fight circumvention. Well, companies from Kazakhstan, Armenia, and Uzbekistan, as well as Iranian drone makers, were also put forward for blacklisting under the proposal by the bloc's Executive European Commission, according to sources. So while criticized by the European Union's Russia hawks as not going far enough, the proposal highlights the expanding scale and scope of the bloc's sanctions as the war drags on. Quote, a number of member states recognize the very significant foreign policy choices that would be involved in moving ahead with listing third countries, end quote, said a senior European Union official. Quote, the fact that the proposal was put forward sends a warning sign in itself, regardless of whether we agree to the time, because the time is now to include those companies and create a new scheme for targeting countries or give them a bit more time to engage. Well, the official and six European Union diplomats said that the bloc should also push its own companies to avoid circumvention. All European Union countries need to agree for new sanctions to be enacted, something that might take time given varying interests and what the source said was fundamentally a new approach that required a lot of technical work and clarifications. The member states' envoys to European Union hub Brussels and the bloc's foreign ministers meeting in Stockholm are due to discuss the matter on Friday, though no final decision is expected then. While some hope for an agreement in May, others point to a June 29 or 30 summit of European Union leaders as more likely. Well, the proposed new sanctions would also target individuals involved in forcibly moving Ukrainian children to Russia and outlawing oil supplies through the northern leg of the Druzhba pipeline with exception of Kazakhstan, said the sources. So new restrictions would highlight that oil tankers are not allowed to offload in high seas or arrive in ports with their GPS trackers off, an attempt to push back against flouting G7 restrictions on trading Russian oil, according to the sources. Well, during the discussion on Wednesday, most countries welcomed the idea of further restricting road transit of European Union goods by Russia, and some raised the need to revise the G7 oil cap, sources had said. So we're going to have to see where all this goes. But it seems that things are ratcheting up even more than one would have expected. So it is moving forward, that is for sure. Now, bear with me a moment as we move along. One second. One second here. Where is it here? I'm looking. Bear with me. I'm sorry about that. Okay. Well, let's also hear what's going on with regard to the former President Trump. He jokes about the sexual abuse verdict and repeats election falsehoods. So it seems that an unrepentant Donald Trump held firm to past grievances at the first televised town hall of the 2024 U.S. presidential election on Wednesday, stressing from the moment he took the stage that he has little intention of mounting a more disciplined campaign for his third White House bid. In a contentious 70-minute broadcast, Trump drew laughter from a New Hampshire audience when he mocked writer E. Jean Carroll's account of his having sexually abused her, repeated falsehood about his 2020 election loss, said he would pardon many of his supporters convicted of taking part in a January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, and called the CNN moderator Caitlin Collins a, quote, nasty person, end quote. Responding to questions from Collins and members of the audience of St. Anselm College, Trump made no effort to offer more moderate positions on issues, which political analysts say is key to broadening his appeal to a wider swath of Republicans. Asked by Collins whether he would acknowledge that he lost to Democrat Joe Biden in 2020, the Republican Trump reasserted unfounded claims that the election was rigged against him, brushing aside her attempts to correct the record. Quote, that was a rigged election, end quote, Trump said, adding that anyone who thought otherwise was, quote, stupid, end quote. Well, Trump, the front runner in the race for the Republican nomination, declined to express regret for the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol when his supporters sought to prevent Congress from ratifying the election result, and he repeated his plan to pardon individuals involved if voters return him to the White House in 2024. Well, Trump and Collins frequently spoke over each other, with Collins challenging a number of the former president's false claims. Now, Stu Rothenberg, a nonpartisan political analyst, said that Trump's performance was a likely prelude to his 2024 campaign. Quote, it was Donald Trump from 2015, right up until now, the big lie, the outrageous style, demeaning individuals, mocking them, said Rothenberg, senior editor at the Inside Elections newsletter. Quote, he hasn't changed, nor will he. It was a glimpse into the next year and a half. Well, the audience of Republicans and independent voters who plan to vote in the Republican primary were generally very supportive of Trump, giving him a standing ovation when he took the stage. New Hampshire is an early nominating state that could prove critical in Trump's bid to win the November 2024 election. Now, some applauded when he described his January 6th speech and the events that led up to the Capitol riot in positive terms. Quote, I've never spoken to a crowd as large as that, and that was because they thought the election was rigged. They were there with love in their heart. That was unbelievable, and it was a beautiful day, he said. Well, responding to Trump's remarks, Democratic National Committee Chair Jamie Harrison issued a statement calling Trump a, quote, dangerous, extreme candidate who seeks to undermine democracy, end quote. Biden sought to fundraise off the event. Quote, do you want four more years of that? If you don't, pitch in to our campaign, Biden wrote on Twitter. Collins tried to fact-check Trump's assertions in real time, sometimes leading to the two talking over each other as Trump, who usually sticks to conservative media outlets, refused to back down. It was Trump's first appearance on CNN since 2016. On Tuesday, a federal jury found Trump sexually abused Carroll in a department store dressing room in Manhattan in the 1990s, then harmed her reputation by describing her claims as a, quote, hoax, end quote, and a lie, quote, end quote. It's said he must pay her $5 million in damages. Trump's lawyer said they would appeal. Quote, what kind of woman meets somebody and brings them up and within minutes they're playing hanky-panky in a dressing room, Trump said. Many disparaging comments about Carroll that elicited applause and laughter. He called her a whack job, quote-unquote. After Tuesday's verdict, Carroll issued a statement saying, quote, today the world finally knows the truth. This victory is not just for me, but for every woman who has suffered because she was not believed, end quote. Trump stood by his remarks in a 2005, quote, Access Hollywood, end quote, tape, in which he bragged about grabbing women by the genitals, suggesting stars would have their way with them, and the comments were used against Trump at their trial. Quote, and they would like me to take that back. I can't take it back because it happens to be true. I said it's been true for 1 million years, approximately 1 million years, perhaps a little bit longer than that, Trump said. I'm not referring to myself. I'm saying people that are famous, people that are stars. Well, we'll see what goes on. But certainly Trump will upset a lot of people. Those that don't support him and those that do support him will be at odds again. We'll see where he goes. You never can tell exactly what's going to happen. He's an extremely persuasive campaigner. He's got a lot of support and wouldn't count him out. One second, bear with me a moment here. This is interesting. From Spain, we hear that its prime minister is going to ask Biden to listen to China, Brazil, and Brazil on Ukraine. Seems that U.S. President, President Biden, at the urging of the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, is going to give more weight to the opinions of non-NATO countries such as Brazil and China on the Ukraine war when he meets President Joe Biden in Washington tomorrow, a Spanish diplomatic source had said. Madrid agrees with Washington on the illegality of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the need to arm Kyiv's forces. But it is positioning itself as an intermediary between, because of its close ties to Latin American countries and more conciliatory relations with Beijing. Sanchez visited Beijing in March, and he received Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva in Madrid last month. China is an ally of Russia and has advocated an alternative peace plan to the one championed by NATO allies. Lula has also made controversial statements on ending the conflict in Ukraine, from which Sanchez has distanced himself. But the Spanish leader will convey to Biden the divergent views of Beijing and Brasilia and propose that greater weight be given to the opinions non-NATO members that are also impacted by the war, the sources had said. So the first White House meeting between the two NATO allies comes just weeks before Sanchez takes over the presidency of the Council of the European Union for the second half of the year. It takes place, now bear with me a moment, it looks like I got somehow disconnected the charge for this site. Okay, where is it? Sanchez will outline to Biden the concept of open strategic autonomy, a central policy of his forthcoming European mandate, which, according to a second government source, is not intended to veer towards protectionism, but to reduce the Europe's vulnerabilities. The potential cooperation on the manufacture and or supply of microchips and semiconductors and the exploitation of the rare earth minerals from Latin America will also be on the agenda between the two leaders. So we'll just have to see where all this goes. So we'll see where that leads. Bear with me a second here as we move on to different subjects. Where are we here? All right, let me go back here to... one second. All right. Should be able to move forward here. Bear with me a second here. All right. Okay. One moment. Well, let's look at what's going on with regard to expelling George Santos. Evidently, the GOP leaders aren't ready to take that step. The protecting a narrow four-vote majority, Republican leaders in the House are making clear that they intend to let the legal process play out with New York Representative George Santos before they take steps to force his resignation or to expel him. The freshman congressman was accused on Wednesday by federal prosecutors of embezzling money from his campaign, falsely receiving unemployment funds, and lying to Congress about his finances, and could face up to 20 years in prison if convicted. Santos pleaded not guilty, though. Republican leaders, who for months have faced mounting questions about Santos after most of his campaign biography was exposed as a lie, were unmoved and brushed aside calls, including from some colleagues, that they may take immediate action to push Santos out of Congress. Well, in America, there's a presumption of innocence, but there are serious charges. He's going to have to go through the legal process, the House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana had said. Scalise was seconded by Republican Representative Elise Stefanik of New York, the number three House Republican, who sidestepped the question of whether Santos should resign. Quote, as I've said from the very beginning on questions on this subject, this legal process is going to play itself out, she said. The position Republican leaders have staked out generally follows the precedent that Congress has set in similar criminal cases over the years. The House has expelled just two members in recent decades, and both votes occurred after the lawmakers had been convicted on federal charges. But many say that the narrow majority that the Republicans won in the House is surely another factor in the GOP's leadership thinking. Quote, there are a few members of the New York delegation and a few others calling for his immediate expulsion on the Republican side, which could tilt the leadership's hand. But given where at with the debt limit and a four-vote majority, they don't want to lose any of those votes right now, said Casey Burgat, an assistant professor who leads the legislative affairs program at George Washington University. Santos is adamant that he will stay in Congress and seek re-election. In a press conference outside a Long Island federal courthouse, he spoke on Wednesday of getting back to Washington so he could vote on a top House GOP priority, a border bill that would restrict some asylum seekers and boost border enforcement. It's expected to be a close vote. Santos also voted last month for the House GOP bill that ties a debt limit extension to an estimated $4.8 trillion in deficit reduction over 10 years. In a dramatic flourish, Santos was the last Republican to cast a vote in favor of that, helping it win passage by a paper-thin margin, 217 to 215. So while GOP leaders say that the legal system needs to run its course, a few Republicans have seen enough. Quote, the people of New York's 3rd District deserve a voice in Congress, tweeted Representative Tony Gonzalez, Republican of Texas. George Santos should be immediately expelled from Congress and a special election initiated at the soonest possible date. The House and the Senate have the power to punish members of their chamber for misconduct, including through expulsion. To date, according to the Congressional Research Service, 20 members have been expelled, but the large majority of them occurred at the outset of the Civil War. Half of the 20 expulsions were the result of a single vote in the Senate involving senators who represented states that had seceded from the Union but had not formally resigned. The two most recent expulsions followed convictions on public corruption charges were, quote, Representative Michael J. Ozzie Myers, a Democrat of Pennsylvania, who was convicted of bribery and conspiracy for taking money from FBI agents who posed as Arab Sheikhs. He was expelled in 1980 following his conviction and served more than a year in prison. Then there's Representative James Traficant, a Democrat of Ohio, who was expelled in 2002. 3 months after he was found guilty of 10 federal charges, including racketeering, bribery, and fraud for taking bribes and kickbacks from businessmen and his own staff. Now, some lawmakers have also resigned upon being convicted of a crime preempting an expulsion vote itself. Last year, Representative Jeff Portenberry, a Republican of Nebraska, resigned from office after a California jury convicted him of lying to federal authorities about an illegal campaign donation from a foreign national. 2 years earlier, Representative Duncan Hunter, Republican of California, submitted his resignation about a month after pleading guilty to a charge of conspiring with his wife to steal about $250,000 in campaign funds to pay for a lavish lifestyle from vacations to outings with friends and private school tuition. Then-President Donald Trump pardoned Hunter shortly before he left office. Well, Trump also pardoned former Representative Chris Collins, a Republican of New York, who resigned in 2019 ahead of admitting to helping his son and others dodge $800,000 in stock market losses when he learned that a drug trial by a small pharmaceutical company had failed. More than three dozen Democratic lawmakers have signed onto a bill from Representative Robert Garcia, Republican of California, that would expel Santos from the House. Quote, it's pretty clear to everyone, including his constituents, that he is a complete fraud and shouldn't be in Congress, Garcia said. Garcia said that McCarthy is not pushing to expel Santos because he needs his vote. He urged the several Republicans from New York who've criticized Santos to sign on to the expulsion legislation. Quote, he can barely keep his caucus together on votes, so it's clear that he's using George Santos's complete support, rather, to keep him in leadership, Garcia said. Well, Republicans deny that Santos has been a distraction and say they are focused on other issues. This place is bigger than any one member, said Representative Kevin Hearn, Republican from Oklahoma, the chairman of the powerful Republican Study Committee. Well, despite the reports that Santos was facing federal charges and a crush of media attention at his arraignment in New York, Republicans said there was no discussion of him during their weekly closed-door caucus meeting Wednesday morning. I have never heard his name mentioned once, said Representative Andrew Clyde, Republican of Georgia. U.S. Representative George Santos has been charged with federal criminal offenses. Two people familiar with the matter advised the Associated Press. The case is under seal and so on. So we'll have to see what goes on after all this. Unbelievable. One moment. I guess you've heard this. Tucker Carlson says he's coming back with a show on Twitter. So the fired Fox News host Tucker Carlson said on Tuesday that he'll be putting out a new version of his program on Twitter. So Carlson made his announcement in a 3-minute video posted on the social media site as part of a denunciation of media. He called Twitter that last big remaining platform that allows free speech. We'll be bringing a new version of the show we've been doing for the last 6.5 years on Twitter. To Twitter, he said, we'll bring some other things too, which we'll tell you about. But for now, we're just grateful to be here. He offered no other details, and a message to his lawyer, Brian Friedman, was not immediately returned. It's unclear what these plans mean for his remaining contract with Fox. Typically, television companies include a no-compete clause when someone leaves the air. A Fox spokeswoman didn't immediately return a call for comment either. Axios reported on Tuesday that Carlson's lawyers sent a letter to Fox
accusing the network of fraud and breach of contract. Fox announced on April 24 that it was cutting ties with Carlson, its most popular primetime anchor, and the network offered no explanation for the move, and Fox's ratings in its old time slot have sharply fallen. So we'll see where all that goes. Well, okay, let me just check. One second. Evidently, this is an article about Prince William of England, whose old university flame reignites cheating rumors. Seems all eyes have been on Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, thanks to their groundbreaking interview with Oprah Winfrey, and that has allowed Kate Middleton and Prince William to hide a rather big scandal about their marriage. The rumors of trouble brewing inside the marriage of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge has been going on for a year now, but a recent photograph of Kate Middleton finally gave us nosy fans the answers we needed. We all remember the couple's 2011 wedding. What a spectacular royal affair it was. Millions of people worldwide tuned in to watch Kate Middleton walk down the aisle in what is now considered one of the best bridal dresses of all time. But before they had their fairy tale kiss on the balcony, life for the couple was anything but rosy. The early days of their relationship also marked with conflict, with many rumors circulating even then about Prince William's devotion to his girlfriend. The couple met at St. Andrews, but it was no love at first sight. In fact, another woman had the prince's attention for a large portion of his college life. It was Carly Macy Birch, a creative writing and an English language student. Well, Kate and William were only cordial during their first year at college, and while Kate had been crowned the prettiest girl in her dorm, Carly had the honor of winning the finest first-year bottom competition at St. Andrews. Yes, this seems to be a thing. Well, the minute they met, William had fallen head over heels for her, and it was a well-known fact around campus, although at the time the tabloid didn't. But things soon cooled off between the pair when Carly found out that William still wasn't over his ex. Well, Arabella Musgrave was a childhood friend of William and had high social standing. The two had dated before the prince left for university, with Arabella breaking things off because she didn't want to deal with the distance. The oft-repeated story of how William finally noticed Kate goes something like, she was modeling for a show, wearing a sheer dress down the catwalk, and that is when Prince William finally saw Kate as more than just friends. Well, but of course, it is only now that we know that William was actually right dab in the middle of many complicated romantic emotions when he finally saw Kate as girlfriend material. It is reported that he even said, wow, Kate is hot. Well, most of us have heard about this moment. Did you know what happened afterwards? Well, William tracked Kate down and they went to an after party together where the couple sat together alone and chatted for hours. Whatever Kate said that night was music to William's ears, and he even leaned in for a kiss, but Kate pulled away. Turns out Kate actually was dating another student at the time, Rupert Finch. Clearly, the attraction between Kate and William is far deeper than whatever she had with Rupert, and things didn't last long between the two. Soon after, William and she made things official and moved into new accommodations together. Well, they named their apartment 13A Hope Street, and unlike most of his other romantic exploits, Prince William tried his best to keep their relationship as secretive as possible. The couple even used to leave the house at separate times for date nights. While the seeds of William and Kate's love were well and truly sown, the prince still had no plans of announcing his interest to the world. When speaking to the Press Association to mark his 21st birthday, he had something rather surprisingly to say. "I don't have a steady girlfriend. If I fancy a girl and I really like her and she fancies me back, which is rare, I ask her out. But at the same time, I don't want to put prospective girlfriends in an awkward situation because a lot of people don't quite understand what comes with knowing me," William continued. "There's been a lot of speculation about every single girl I've been with, and it does quite irritate me after a while, more so because it's a complete pain for the girls." Before William and Kate would move their relationship further, Jekka Craig walked into the prince's life, and apparently things got serious fast. The media reported that William and Jekka had performed an engagement ceremony. And despite the royal family very rarely commenting, it was only when they stepped in and confirmed that no such event happened that the rumors of Jekka being William's true love finally died down. But in private, despite living together, it did seem that Kate and William's romance was fizzling down. During Prince William's 21st birthday, many guests noticed that Jekka was seated next to William while Kate wasn't even at the main table. So furthermore, the celebration team was out of Africa. The duo had met in Kenya, and that is also the place where their reported pretend engagement took place. But even then, amongst friends, it was still known that Kate and William were together. So while we weren't sure what happened since the birthday party between Jekka and Prince William, he did finally make up his mind about Kate. News of the relationship finally made headlines in April of 2024. The couple were spotted on a skiing trip. The Sun ran the headline, "Finally, Wills gets a girl." To the many ups and downs of their short relationship again, and William found their groove back and was steady for a while until, well, the bliss didn't last long and William went around flirting with other women, sometimes right in front of Kate, and now with their relationship public, each rumor and gossip was making headlines. And Kate wasn't impressed. She was fuming when William went on holiday with Anna Sloan, an affluent American. He also pictured many times with heiress Isabella Anstruther Goof Calthorpe to consider. Kate still loved William, and things got so bad that she even banned him from seeing Isabella again. And this was definitely not something he appreciated, and the pair decided to separate. So somehow they managed to keep their news away from the hungry tabloids at the time, and reportedly William went to go see Jekka in Kenya the minute he got separated from Kate, making it seem obvious that he always had her on his mind. We aren't kidding when he said that the couple runs hot and cold. A year after making their relationship publicly official, Kate took the next big step with William and went on holiday with Prince Harry and Prince Charles. Well, this seemed like a significant step towards a serious relationship, one which, many other girlfriends had never been given. The holiday seemed to have been a success, and soon Kate was seen in many royal gatherings. Well, the pair both graduated from St. Andrews University, and the couple looked happier than ever. Tabloids constantly speculated when exactly will Prince William pop the big question, officially add Kate into the family. So this wasn't happening anytime soon. Rather than get down on one knee, William decided to join the British Army. His news made the tabloids even wilder, with many again suggesting that William was unfaithful to Kate. Didn't help matters that every week Prince William was spotted hanging out with one girl or another. At one point, the prince was spotted dancing at a nightclub with Tess Shepherd. Another night saw him taking out a new girl for drinks. So by 2007, no one really believed that William would ever marry Kate. The media had been given her had given her a terrible nickname, Weighty Katie, and royal insiders believed that Kate was so sick of the headlines that she gave William an ultimatum: he either marry her or leaves her. And William had an answer. By Easter of that year, Kate and William had split up. Kate even wore a daring party dress and hit the party circuit in full force. She was determined to show everybody that she was just fine without William. Well, in April of 2007, an unnamed friend of the prince confirmed that what everybody knew already. They told the Evening Standard that marriage was never on the cards. They added that Kate did everything she could to make him stay, playing a waiting game 1 minute and then hard to get the next. The royal insider also said, notably, just the other week, she said she intended to be photographed at as many places as she could without William to punish him for all those pictures that appear to be clubbing, that with him clubbing with other girls. So they continued, but William's heart just wasn't in it anymore. As she was planning the wedding, he was working out how to extricate himself. Another source told the Evening Standard he always had a roving eye, far more so than Harry, who was meant to be the family playboy. Of course, as we know, Kate and William ended up getting back together and finally in 2010 revealed the news, which everyone was waiting to hear for years. They were engaged and getting married. Well, so the first years of Kate and William's marriage was all but seemed to focus on how Kate was dealing with becoming a royal wife, and the days of Prince William's lurking eye were soon forgotten. But after years of marital bliss, in March of 2017, the prince was videotaped in a compromising position at a nightclub. It looked like his old habits were resurfacing, it all seemed, when he was away on a ski holiday with friends in Switzerland. The video shows the prince observing the dancing playfully, and Vanity Fair reported that Kate was less than pleased, quote-unquote, to hear about it. And then in 2019, the big unconfirmed news broke. William had allegedly cheated on Kate while she was pregnant with Louis, and the other woman was none other than their neighbor, Rose Hanbury, Marchioness of Cholmondeley. The story also suggested that Kate and Rose had a falling out due for that reason. Well, Richard Eden and of the Daily Mail claimed that Kate seemed to see Rose as a rival, the Sun quoted a source who said, and so it was. Things are tense between them. Over the years, Rose and Kate's lives have been intertwined in many ways. So that's the story. Well, it's 11 o'clock, and hope all's well with the Driving Me Crazy duo, because we didn't hear from them today. So we'll just leave it be and then move on. So I want to thank you all for being with us today. Definitely been a pleasure. And that's it. So take care and be well. And goodbye. Let me just see. Okay. All right. Okie doke. I don't understand what the fuck is going on. Mm-hmm. Yen's is fucking shit. I'm fucking male. But shit, man. Really fucking shit.
Thank you.